Look, whether or not Anton is indeed a midget or a dwarf...
No, he's a midget.
What's the difference?
Well, a dwarf is someone who has disproportionately short arms and legs.
Oh, I know the ones.
Yeah, it's caused by a hormone deficiency.
Yeah, bloody hormones. Yeah. Mm.
A midget is still a dwarf, but their arms and legs are in proportion.
You're listening to Banal of America Audio.
So, what's an elf?
Do you want to answer that?
An elf is a supernatural being. Sometimes they're invisible, they're like fairies.
They don't actually exist, do they? In real life.
Yeah, you just bring a sleeping bag just to do one of those sort of like... I would like to do a scenario like that where you just don't... You're not like walking around being like, hello, hello. You're just kind of like, all right, dude, we'll just crash. We're going to sleep in the oubliette and where a bunch of people were tortured and shit, and maybe something cool will happen.
Yeah, no, it's not like there's any, the castle really isn't all that finished. I mean, in fact, the Bloody Chapel is completely open to the elements. And as I said, the oubliette is just off the Bloody Chapel. So I can't imagine that, like, he would have much aversion if you're going to throw him, like, 75 euro that you can just sleep up there for the night. If anything, I'm sure he'd be worried about, insurance more than he'd be worried about, something happening to you.
I feel like that's probably more of an American thing. in America, I hope so. Get sued. So they'd be like, no, dude, you're not sleeping in my garage, stranger from... Yeah, Ireland, because you could drink my gasoline or something. I don't know. You could stumble over my snowblower and sue me. So I don't get out of my house, weird stranger.
True, that's all true. Well, I would that's an experience that I would love to do, is to spend some time there to talk to him more. But again, I'm not going to be pushy about it. And it's not like this. I was in the right place. Like, I know that. And I'm not going to, pester him about it, because some people just don't want to talk about these things.
No, but I'd like to see the look on your wife's face when you're like, hey, can we sleep in the oubliette tonight? She'd be like, all right, I've got this. This is a bridge too far, Josh.
Hey, it's man, my I said I do this because, like, she's an absolute saint for putting up with me, but, I married my wife, and at one point she was one of these people who didn't want to watch horror films because it put bad thoughts in your mind. She's watched
the news.
Well, she's the daughter of a Baptist preacher, and she has come out of her shell a lot, and she's been an absolute saint for putting up with all my occult interests, and has really come to understand these subjects as I do, and has really opened up, like, the idea that I would ever have even gotten her into this castle in the first place, 5 years ago, 6 years ago, probably would have been a non-starter.
Are you going to repay the favor and now take, like, a 2-week trip to Dollywood or something?
No, I'm just going to watch some chick flicks, hopefully, and I'll get off the hook there.
Now I'm imagining, like, Josh's wife's like a big, like, Shania Twain super fan or something. She's like, we're going to Toronto, and we're going to do the Shania Twain super fan tour, and we're going to go to the town she grew up in for 2 days. And you're just like, all right, fine.
No, that's the great thing, is like, I kept on finding her, like, she was ended up interested in the things that I was interested in too. So, which was, it was a real blessing. Yeah, thankfully she's not one of these types who's like, I want to go see, Tony Orlando is coming to Nashville. You go see him,
Yeah, exactly. It's like, well, we're going to, yeah. Oh, man. So we talked a little bit about the driving and everything. How was food and drink, one of my favorite topics? How was the meal experience in Ireland? Because, England gets a bad rap because it's just stereotyped as like bad food, but I found the food in England to be excellent. So, what did you think of the meals and the drink in Ireland?
Well, a couple things surprised me. So I stuck mostly to pubs because I'm a pub hound, and I love that sort of, the pageantry of it. I want to move into every pub I see, really. But I was it was nice for me because I've over the years I have built up and I have glorified the concept of the Irish pub in my mind, and it's nice to know that shitty bars in other countries are like shitty bars in America, and there are some places just because it's an Irish pub does not mean that's a great spot to go. I am astounded by the fact that that outside of Guinness products, and I love me a good harp, but outside of Guinness products, there is like generally like Carlsberg, Heineken, Coors, and Budweiser. not a strong craft beer industry in Ireland. We found some, but you have to look for it. Like, you're not going to go into a bar and find like a local brew. Like, it just doesn't work that way.
Oh, weird. Yeah.
I was also astounded, and again, we had some really good food. So we had some exceptional food. There's a wonderful place in Dublin that we went, but. We had some really exceptional food, and I was wanting to try each one of the, the pub favorites, the corn, corned beef and cabbage, bacon and cabbage, fish and chips, which I had like five times. And I wanted to try shepherd's pie, right? I only found shepherd's pie on one menu the last night at.
Oh wow.
It was incredible. Like, it was part of a land sampler at this wonderful place in Dublin, gorgeous pub called the Bank on College Green. And it was
a lamb shepherd's pie.
Yeah, well, that's what it's supposed to be.
Wow.
I was astonished. Like, I was astonished by the fact that there wasn't more. Maybe somebody from Ireland who's listening can tell us why. Maybe it's an American thing, Maybe it's like, I'm sure Miguel could tell me some sort of crazy thing that we eat in America that we think is Mexican that isn't. But maybe it's something like that, Maybe it's just you don't see it much in Ireland. But God, that was the only shepherd's pie I saw the entire time. I was astounded.
Well, what I noticed when I was in England was that it seemed like, I go to a lot of sort of mom-and-pop type places, but not that many. But still, it seemed even more like a, to a degree, greater than that over there, where it was like you genuinely got the impression when you were eating the food at the pubs and stuff that it was like cooked by – it was like homemade. Everything kind of had like a homemade feel, where it was like you could just kind of tell, like, the portions were eyeballed and that kind of thing, where it's like, there's not just some kid in the back doing like, all right, I have to give him two scoops of the corn. It was just like, you just got the plate like your mom made it for you, where it was like, they just slopped the shit on there, and it was delicious, but there was no presentation to it at all, or, like, no oversight. It was just kind of like, here's the meal, and it was great.
No, absolutely. It's not like, they're pulling out a plastic bag with Cisco on the side there. There was one pub that we went to that was like, the beginning scene of American Werewolf in London, where they're sitting in the pub and it's like there's just locals in there and like no one wants to talk. it was kind of like that. but it was great food. But I will say this for Ireland in general. Every single meal we had came out piping hot. Like, you had to sit there and stare at it and wait for it to cool down. Whereas in America, it's like, this was sitting under a heat lamp for, 5 minutes. 10 minutes. But every single meal we had was just, like, absolutely hot. It was incredible.
Very nice. What else about Ireland? Because we're going to go over the 2-hour mark, I'm sure. Hopefully that's okay with you.
Oh, yeah, fine.
All right. Because like I said, it's your, in a sense, it's like your vacation. So I don't know anything about the story about the guy you ran into in the lobby of the hotel on the fourth day. So if there's something like amazingly weird or cool that happened to you that stood out, let me know. Because I'm like, part of me sort of like a blind man in an orgy here.
Well, part of me is, I mean, part of me is a little bit apprehensive because I don't want to be that person who's like, I feel like I've already been that person who's like, look at my photos to Ireland. It's so beautiful. Look at it. Oh, it's been such a wonderful trip. I feel like I'm just going on a podcast talking about my trip.
No. But, well, when I got back from Canada, I wanted to do the same thing, and I forced Jeremy Vanney to listen to me for hours. So I totally empathize. I'm interested because I would like to go and check it out. Did you kiss the Blarney Stone? There was some controversy on your Facebook page over that. Was that too touristy for you?
It was a little bit too touristy for me. And, like, you're supposed to get the gift of gab out of it, and, like, I talk too much anyway, so
Yeah, I can only imagine how this show would have turned out. I would have just put you on and walked away and done my laundry.
Yeah, basically. We did a bunch of other stuff. Like, we toured the Bushmills Distillery, and we did some other touristy stuff. We went to a couple other castles as well. I'm just going to try to hit the 14 highlights. I guess another 14 highlight would be the Belvedere House, which is kind of an interesting spot just outside of Dublin. There's a nobleman who it's notable for two, well, for me for three, but for two reasons.
Mr. Belvedere, I believe was his
Belvedere.
Name.
Belvedere.
I just think of the TV show, Mr. Belvedere.
Oh, is that? Something like that. What is that?
What?
Is that an old?
You don't know Mr. Belvedere?
No, I didn't know about Mr. Belvedere.
Wait a minute. You do or you don't know Mr. Belvedere?
I don't. No, I don't.
Jesus. Now I feel old. It was like a late 1980s sitcom about a butler who lived with a suburban family in Wisconsin.
Oh, wait. Is that O Belvedere, dear boy? Is that from that or no?
No, I think Mr. Bel, I think Belvedere, the name has been around for a long time, but Mr. Belvedere was, he lived with Bob Uecker, of all people. It was a sitcom. Bob Uecker was the star of the sitcom, and Mr. Belvedere was like this English guy. It's a complicated story. The reason why I love it so much is then they did a Saturday Night Live skit about Mr. Belvedere super fans, and it was like with Tom Hanks and. It was probably one of the best skits they ever did on the show, and that I'm serious. They always show it on the best ofs, where it was like they were just stalking Mr. Belvedere, and Tom Hanks wandered into the meeting and was like, "You people are crazy." Where it was like, "I should want to meet him, but I should not want to clip a lock of his hair." It was like a support group for Mr. Belvedere fans. It was so absurd and fucking hilarious that I still quote it to this day.
Nice.
But so okay. We'll get back to Belvedere in Ireland. So you were at a thing, you were at a place called Belvedere, and it was important to you for three reasons. So what were they?
Yeah, well, there are two reasons that people actually give a damn about, and for me there are three reasons. So the first reason is that this nobleman basically heard that his wife was cheating on him, and he held her under house arrest for 30 years in this house. Now, granted, if you have the trap somewhere, for 30 years, it's a pretty beautiful house to be trapped in, but it's still an interesting story. The other thing is, it's known for the Jealous Wall, which is the owner's brother bought a home on the shores of the loch, and in response, because he didn't like his brother, the owner of the original house built what is known as a folly. And a folly is a structure deliberately made to look like a ruin, deliberately made to look old. And he built this right up against the side of his house. It's this giant, it looks like the wall of a giant abbey or a giant monastery or a giant cathedral. And it's known as the Jealous Wall because it literally like blocked the site of the brother's house from the side of his
Weird.
House. So it's a famous tourist attraction to see. But the thing that I found really interesting was that I was looking at the owners of the house, and one of the owners at one point had the last name of Howard Berry, B-U-R-Y. And I don't know if you are familiar. Does that name ring a bell at all?
No, I just thought it was sort of like I could tell, or I thought that it was going to go in a creepy direction because his name is Barry. So it's like he, and he was also a serial killer and he buried the people alive or something.
Charles Howard Barry is largely credited with bringing the legend of the abominable snowman to America or to the Western world.
Oh wow!
Yeah, he had an expedition to Everest and he brought back. I mean, I'm sure that there were earlier musings of before that or earlier reports before that. And anybody who's sitting there, you know, listening to me. It's been a long day, guys, so give me some credit. But he's largely regarded as one of the first people to mention the Mech Ken Mi, the filthier abominable cinema. Let's see. Is there anything else that I can talk about? Yeah, I'm trying to see if there's anything else that's remotely 14 that I can talk about.
I'm sure you'll have. It's kind of one of those things where stories come to you later on. You're like, "Holy shit, I forgot all about that." I've had those happen to me where it's like,
I journaled the whole thing, I don't want to talk about silly stuff that, you know, is just isn't 14, because I'd rather talk about, like, you know, odd or spooky things. We did see The Dark Hedges, which is, I don't know if you...
Dark
Hedges. Do you watch Game of Thrones?
No, I do not watch Game of Thrones.
There was a spot in one of the, I think it was like season one or season two, where they're traveling on the King's Road, and there's a beautiful road that is covered in trees. Like, it's basically a tunnel of trees on this road. And we went there. I love Game of Thrones as much as anybody else. I just want to see it because it's a beautiful formation of trees. I mean, some of these trees, I think, were upwards of 350 years old that are just creeping over this roadway. A video of that too, so there'll be plenty of videos in my travels.
Sounds like there's a lot to consume. This sounds like a total like stoner question, but this happened to me when I was in England. I lived in England for like 5 months, and I didn't hang on it. I don't even remember when I noticed it, but for some reason it kind of stuck with me. But there was like this one moment like where. I think as soon as I got there, I kind of lost track of a lot of shit where it was just like I didn't really, you know, you get to the other country and you're just trying to get situated and all that stuff. But finally, like at one point I saw like a map and it kind of gave me a freak out moment in a sense where it's like I was in England, but I mean, you'd be in Ireland. And it's like my home is like... all the way across this giant ocean. And it kind of freaked me out for a minute where I was just like, I am so far, far from home. It sounds like a Rush song or something, but it was a profound, weird moment. I'm sure I was drunk, but it's one of the few times when I was drunk and had a profound moment that had stuck with me all these years. Where it was just like, I'm kind of creeped out right now that I'm that far away, you know, from everyone you love. It's like you're on the moon. Like, you come to a realization that, like, you're on the moon. Did it ever hit you in a sense? Like, at one point you mentioned, like, I didn't travel, like, 3,000 miles or whatever to get out here or whatever. But it's like, did it ever sort of cross your mind that you had made that journey so far away?
Oh, yeah. I mean, this is the farthest I've been away from home. We didn't spring for any sort of cell phone service at all. So it was nice to be sort of, you know, cut off in a way. But yeah, I mean, partially it felt like a dream. I mean, because, you know, it's everything is so surreal. You're still trying to get used to the time difference. And, I mean, I'm seeing places, in this case, I'm seeing places that I never thought I'd see. And I'm seeing, like, names, place names that I've written about in books and about, you know, in blog posts and such, or that I've read about, you know. It's just, it's really, really strange to me. I mean, you know, it was very surreal. And, you know, I'm sort of reminded of, I don't know if you're familiar with that George Carlin bit. This crossed into my head a couple times. But that George Carlin bit about stuff, you go on a vacation, you take a smaller version of your stuff, and then you go on a day trip, you take an even smaller version of your stuff, and while you're on the day trip, you spend your night, you know, at somebody else's place, and you take just the essential shit that you need, you know, and his line is, supply chains are getting harder and harder to maintain, and that's sort of the way that I felt sometimes, you know, my stuff's scattered all over the world, but here I am, and I had this joke with my wife that she and I have been through a lot, because being a cynic at heart, I was half convinced that I would never get to make this trip, and I would always joke that, you know, Europe doesn't exist. After a while, you get really solipsistic about it, you know. It's like, why only things that exist are things that I can see and touch, and, you know. Which, I mean, obviously isn't true, and I obviously didn't believe that, but it was just sort of my bitter way to joke about it. But just to, again, to experience these things, and
are we boring you?
No, sorry, that was, I'm getting my second win.
I was just channeling my aunt, go ahead.
I mean, the countryside is so different than pretty much anything you're going to see in America. I used to talk to, like, I spent, you know, 4 years in Wisconsin, and it's near and dear to my heart, and I feel like everything in Ireland is Wisconsin dialed up to 11. But at the same time, it's dialed up to 11. Like, you haven't seen anything like some of these spots, like the Cliffs of Moher. You've never seen that, you know, you've never seen...
Yeah.
Anything like the Giant's Causeway, and just to see that stuff that you've seen in the past, the stuff that is so foreign and alien to you, and to be immersed in a culture that, even though you share a language, you know, for the most part, is foreign and alien to you, it's striking. It's a culture shock, and I'm incredibly grateful for it. I mean, I know there's some people probably who have been, you know, all through Europe and Asia and thinking that sort of sound like a hayseed.
Fuck those people. I want to do that too. So, hey,
well, you know, at the end of the day, like, I honestly can't, I'm going to say this, like, I can't think of more people that could have been more grateful than I have been for this, because I told Greg last night that I am astounded by the fact that I only cried three times over there, three or four times, you know.
Yeah, you are a crier. That's what I like about you, buddy. You're a crier.
I've
turned into a crier in my old age now, as I gotten older.
Yeah,
the sappy commercial can get me. It's that bad. I'll see a sappy commercial, you know, like with the ones where, like, the puppies are dying, and I'll be like, I gotta leave the room and have a cigarette. It's like that bad. At times I'm like, I wonder if I have a brain tumor or something. I'm getting very emotional about car commercials.
I was the one who helped open those floodgates in Paramania. Remember?
Exactly. Yeah, you were like an emotional shaman.
I know, an emotional shaman. Something like that.
Now, let me ask you a question, because I saw this on Twitter, and I want to reward the live listeners so they can hear this answer in discussion. I saw you post this today, and this is kind of a good segue, I guess, into whatever we do after the show. And that's that you said on Twitter today that you think that your fairy research has sort of, like, I don't want to put words in your mouth, and I don't have the tweet in front of me, but essentially you were saying...
You put worse things in my mouth, too.
Oh, Jesus. Save that for the after show. But you were saying that, like, you think that your fairy research, or based on what you've, you know, uncovered in the fairy research, that you think you can explain or, you can have a hypothesis for these missing 411 cases. And I guess my idea maybe is that, like, some kind of you're suggesting some kind of, like, fairy influence, clearly, based, you kind of imply that. Giving you respect, giving you props, you were like, yeah, but most, you know, some people won't agree with me, you know, people argue with me, I don't really care, but this is, I've kind of come to some kind of, like, idea. So, which I like, because you're not, like, out there going, I figured it out! It's like you're saying, I kind of think I might have an idea what might be going on here. So, it's a very long question, but, like, what, you teased it, so what do you, because everybody loves this missing 411 stuff, what do you think, how do you think this is connected to the fairy phenomena?
Well, you know, I'm not going to, I think I said, you mentioned this, but, like, I'm going to reiterate it again. I wouldn't expect everybody to agree with me, and I don't think I'd even debate anybody about it, because it's just sort of where I've come to in my research, and hopefully I'll sort of outline part of this, because the next book is on paranormal child abduction, and I don't think you can talk about, you know, that subject without bringing up some missing 411 cases. Yeah, it's dark. Like, I talk about, there's one part in the book where I talk about, God, this is so awful, a guy who was arrested in the Chinatown section of Thailand a couple years ago, who was roasting male fetuses and gold leafing them for ritualistic purposes.
Dude, you're horrifying. Oh my God! I just want to say this, since we have with witnesses, though, because now you're talking about your book after the fairy book. If you write that book about animals and the paranormal without me, I have the legal right to shoot you in at least the foot.
I would never do that. But you know, this book, which I just finished, I finished my edits today. There's two more books that I need to plug into this book. One of which I bought in Ireland, which is half an Irish, you know, like Gaelic sort of Irish that I need to. It has some good pull quotes in it that I want to use, block quotes rather. This book that I just finished has got some really dark moments in it. I don't think you can talk about that the subject of, you know, paranormal child abduction without talking about you know, the missing 411 stuff. And the thing about the missing 411 stuff that I find fascinating, and it argues against the statement that I just made about, you know, thinking that I've got part of it figured out. But the missing 411 stuff has really turned into a Rorschach test for the paranormal.
That's deep, yeah.
Well, if you're into Bigfoot, you're going to see Bigfoot. And if you're into UFOs, you're going to see that. And so,
That's totally true, and I never thought of it that way, yeah.
Well, the irony is that, you know, what am I into and what do I see at play? Fairies and fairies. But I don't think, this is where I will stand quasi-firm, I don't think that there is any existent explanation that explains every facet of the missing 411 mythos as parsimoniously as the fairy faith, because, you know, if you do the Sasquatch thing, you've got to answer, well, why is inclement weather always involved in these missing person cases? You know, if you do the alien thing, you've got to ask why there seems to be, you know, this correspondence between berry bushes and berry picking or boulder fields. If you think that it's the government doing it, then why is the government taking people's clothes off? If you think it's a serial killer, then what serial killer operates over the space of, you know, hundreds of years. But there is a precedent literally for every single aspect of the missing 411, characteristics and the missing 411 trends in fairy folklore. And it's not only like one of these things like, oh, there's this one obscure quote. It's an established fact that, you know, fairies use whirlwinds and storms to abduct people. You know, it's a well-established fact. I found an essay with, like, dozens of examples of people who go berry picking and who claim to have been abducted by fairies and or were warned, you know, traditionally in their families against berry picking because it attracts fairies. You know, there are precedents for, you know, why people are found without clothing in the missing 411 cases. There's a precedent and a parallel for that in fairy lore. And so over the course of the book, I sort of outline a lot of the things that, that you know, people historically, you know, kept their children from doing to keep them from being abducted by fairies. And, again, also I talk about alien abduction too, but I outline the things that, sort of the repellents that people had to keep their children from being abducted by the fairies. And, you know, a lot of these things line up with the missing 411 stuff. Or a lot of the risks. I talk about those too. A lot of them line up as well. So, and the thing that, the way I paint myself out of this corner is I don't know what the fairy faith describes. I don't know what fairy lore describes. But I think that it's, I don't think what it describes is what it thinks it's describing, if that makes any sense. In other words, it's trying to describe something that the alien, the, you know, modern abduction mythos is trying to describe as well. Both of them are probably incorrect, but there is a lot less dogma around the fairy faith versus around what you find in ufology. And, you know, whatever the fairy faith is describing is something that is playing a role behind the missing 411 stuff. I don't know if it literally means fairy folk or if it's trying to describe something else that it literally can't describe, but it's getting at the same root cause.
Interesting. Yeah, I see what you're saying. Kind of like how they were like, go back to that Rorschach idea, how they were like UFOs back in the day were like airships, and then they were, this, you know, Foo Fighters, and then they were flying saucers, and then black triangles. Maybe it's like the fairy, the disappearing people is the same phenomenon, just in a modern lens. Where now it's we don't know what it is. It's missing for, you know, and that's, with all due respect to David Pleiades, it's like, in a way, it's kind of his fault and his genius, where it's like he doesn't ascribe it to any thing, so it's just like this hanging mystery of, like, missing 411. It's like it would essentially be the same thing as the fairy lore back in the day, where it's like, what happened? It was like, oh, a fairy took her away, and now it would be like, missing 411, man. Who knows?
Yeah. Well, you know, it's I think that whatever modern UFO lore is describing is real. I think that whatever fairy lore described is real. I think they're describing the same thing. I don't think necessarily that they are fairies or UFOs as we understand. I think it's probably the best way for me to put it. But at the same time, like, I don't think that anybody, like, you know, I put myself on the fringes of the fringe, on the fringes of the fringe here. I mean, like, no one gives a damn about fairy lore, really. I mean, maybe I played a small part in the resurgence, but at the same time, I think that it still remains underappreciated in a huge way.
Well, yes, but like a good cult show or cult idea or cult band or whatever, it's like the people that are interested in it you know, they're the fans you want. I saw you post a thing about Rick and Morty on your Facebook page where it's like, how they cause all that trouble with the Szechuan. There's a big, like, thing going on with Rick and Morty where it's like, it's too popular. Like, losers like it now, and assholes like it now. It's like, in a way, the fairy idea is kind of like the antithesis of that, where it's like, at least the people who care about it are at least, like, smart, intelligent, interested people who you want to converse with.
Now, to be fair, and like, let me get this out there before I get hate mail. I haven't seen Rick and Morty yet. I'm sure I would love it because it looks like it scratches all my issues.
No, you didn't say that.
I'm just tired of the Szechuan sauce story. Like, it's all over my Facebook feed.
Yeah,
that's all that I see.
Yeah, you posted a thing on Facebook that was like, you know, enough of this Rick and Morty Szechuan sauce thing. And the funny part was I started writing in response to you, but then something came up, and I was like, welcome back to America, dude. This is the news. This is what the news is here, you know. Fans of cartoon show riot at McDonald's. That was the big news of the weekend. It was like, oh, my God. Oh, did you have much call for shock? Oh, here's a – yeah, well, thank you to all the folks who listened live, and enjoy the post-show part here. And since they already we already lost them, there's no sense in doing the plugs. We'll do those at the end. I don't want to get too deeply into this, but did you like did people? Because when I was in Canada, I noticed that people didn't want to bring up like America and the whole American political craziness unless you voluntarily like brought it up. I noticed, but was it like at all a topic of conversation with people in Ireland where they were like, "Oh, Donald Trump, something like that."
No, impression of anything. I never heard the word Trump, but I definitely got a lot of sympathy because, I mean, Vegas had just happened.
Right.
So, like, that was sort of like, oh, you're from America? Gosh, that sucks. Sorry about that. It's crazy.
Is that what brought up the gun control talk with the dude, or was that completely...
Oh, yeah, no, that's exactly what he was like, I'm sure you've heard about it.
That's what I figured, but...
You know.
Yeah.
Yeah. But, like, in terms of, I don't think I ever heard the word... Well, I heard the word Trump once, but it wasn't in a conversation with me. So, yeah.
I won't burden you with the Vegas thing because I saw you liked my comment, and we're gonna have Aaron Golias on the show next week talk about conspiracies and stuff like that. But
hey,
something about that Vegas thing is just really it's giving me the heebie-jeebies.
No,
like it doesn't really add up, and I'm not one of those. And anyone who listens to the show knows I'm like. I fucking hate those conspiracy theories. I hate, like, the Boston one. I hate, like, Sandy Hook. I think all that shit's bullshit. But this one's, like, there's just something that's just kind of weird about this one that doesn't quite make sense. Like, I feel like we're not getting the full story on this one at all.
Yeah, I mean, like, so I'm sympathetic to conspiracy culture because, like, you know, folks like me and you, we live in pretty fragile glass houses compared to the, you know.
Yeah, these are fellow travelers, yeah.
And I think that, but at the same time, like, I think that conspiracy culture has really gone up its own ass in, like, the last 3 years. Having said that, like, yeah, this smells weird, and, like, I think that, like, I know you don't want to go off on a big tirade about this, but...
I saw that you were going to be a complete asshole, in a sense, because I saw you liked the thing, and it was like, okay, well, I'm not the only one,
no.
And he's going to be on the show, so I might as well bring this up in a sense, because to me it was like, there's just something weird about this, and then when you liked it, I was like, okay, all good, I'm not a complete idiot, that like, something fucking weird is going, like, you know, when they say, I was talking to our mutual friend Steve Ray on Facebook the other day, and I said, you know, yesterday they said, oh, now we think the guy checked in on the 25th or the 24th or whatever. And all up until yesterday they said he checked in on the 28th. And it was like, you're the fucking FBI, dude. Like, you don't know when this dude checked into the hotel. It takes you 6 days to, like, to know when this guy checked into the hotel. Like, that to me, and maybe it is some bureaucratic bullshit reason why their information changed. But it's like, If you don't want people talking about conspiracy theories and conjuring conspiracy theories, don't do such a shitty job of telling us the information, man.
Yeah, and like, I mean, so my so much to talk about. Like the amount of time that passed is suspect to me. You know, 72 minutes to pin down where he was shooting from.
Response time thing has changed. I mean, I don't know. I'm sure you saw this thing yesterday where it was like the guard. Originally, the guard was the one who came to the room and he freaked out and fucking shot the guard. And then he stopped shooting everybody and then he killed himself. And now they're like, oh, it turns out the guard was there 5 minutes before, you know, 8 minutes before the shooting started. And it was like, this changes everything. Like, this changes the whole fucking story. Like, what are you talking about?
No, I totally agree, and I'm not one of these people who, like, I'm not one of these people who's on, like, the crisis actor thing or any of that, quite frankly, what I consider insensitive garbage, quite frankly. I'm not denying that there might be some sort of hidden, planned hand in this. You know, one of the things that people are talking about is the fact that Jason Aldean's tattoo is the exact same tattoo as the Illuminati card, you know, playing card deck. But I'm also like, that's that's fucking blackjack. Like it's like a tattoo that you would get. Now, what's more interesting to me is the fact, and this ties into how I'm more interested in this as a whole, is the fact that the shooting took place on 10/1, and you could read Jack Ace as 10/1 as opposed to blackjack.
Right.
And so in that sense, I'm more interested in like. I'm not sure if I'm on the Illuminati, hidden hand, false flag bandwagon as much as I'm on the Lauren Coleman Twilight language bandwagon, which I think has a lot of legs. The fact that it's a harvest festival on 10/1 and there's a guy named, Paddock who used to work for, a defense contractor like that. That all is a lot more interesting to me than some sort of giant. Plan for this to have gone down the road.
Right. Yeah. The idea of these things being fake to me is so ridiculous. It's just that inoffensive. You hit the nail on the head with that. It's like, to me, it's like to imply, I mean, there's people, if you lived in the areas where these things happen, I'm sure you would know or see on the news people that this happened to. But I guess if you're a true believer, you're like the news is fake. It's not really. It's like you're watching the Vegas local news, dude. Like you think that's controlled by the Illuminati? Like Channel 4 is your local newspaper is controlled by the Illuminati when they report on, the girl from your local high school that got shot. Like to me, that's crazy talk.
Yeah, so I mean, while I think there might be a hidden hand in these sort of things, I think it's a hidden hand that's beyond human control. It's sort of what I come around to.
Exactly. Yeah.
And with that, I think that's something significant. I think that's what really tickles, not tickles my fancy, because that sounds like I'm enjoying the fact that this happened. But because the whole thing is false flags are to push through an agenda, but the agenda never gets pushed through. I don't know what the agenda is.
Right.
I would be more open to the idea of some sort of ritualistic thing than I would necessarily an agenda being a governmental or human society civilization based agenda being pushed through.
Yeah, it makes more sense in that regard because it's just too. And it's funny in a sense because the. To steal a phrase from the classic paranormal nomenclature and idea, it's like, but then to throw it on its head, it's like I want to believe the mainstream story, but they're doing such a terrible job of putting it out there that I'm left with no option but to be very suspicious. It's like if they had come out and been like, here are the facts, and they didn't just change them after a week, I'd be like, oh, okay, but. I should note, and Steve Ray, God bless him, made a very good point that I'd already thought of, but he kind of reinforced it. That's this. Who knows the guard who changed the story surrounding the guard that changed? Maybe he was doing some shit and he didn't want to tell the cops. Like maybe he was doing something, that he didn't want people to know he was doing, and then stumbled upon this guy, and then next thing you know. And it's so his story changed or some shit like that. So, there's human elements that we can't necessarily, ascribe to some grandiose plan.
I agree with that. And, but again, it's not like there's one discrepancy. There's a lot of discrepancies. Somebody, I was listening to the Higher Side chat today because I'm interested in how, the conspiracy community is handling this, and an interesting question was brought up that I have not ever thought of. That I was wondering what the answer of it is. When you see these estimates of casualties from these events, why does the death count always go up and the injured count not go down simultaneously?
What do you mean? I just assume, the people that – they can save all the people who were initially injured, and they don't – maybe the death count goes up, by one or two.
But you'd think that if the initial report was 50 dead, 50 – let's throw out some numbers. 50 dead, 50 wounded, right?
Yeah.
Tomorrow, you'd expect it to be 51 dead, 49 wounded, right?
Yeah, I guess, but I think the idea
Am I being dense somehow about this?
No, I don't think you're being dense. I just think it's like
that rarely happens, right? Like the wounded estimate never is revised. Now maybe that's like some sort of stylistic guideline.
It's just that it's like, okay, let's say there was a shooting, right? 50 dead, 50 wounded. Just because the 50 people get out of the hospital doesn't mean they like weren't wounded. So it's only like forever. What the shithead guy did is forever like 50-50.
Right, but
like it was a terrible shooting. 50 people died and 50 people were wounded. It's like just because you went to the hospital because the guy shot you in the leg and you got better doesn't mean you weren't shot in the leg by the guy at the thing.
But the assumption is that as the death toll climbs post, as the death toll climbs post incident, those are the wounded becoming the dead, right?
So you would assume that one number
would go up and the other number would go down, unless it's, so. Like, why is it always the dead, the death toll that goes up and the wounded number never goes? I never thought of that. There might be some sort of very very mundane and prosaic explanation for that, but I never really thought of that.
To me it just seems like a kind of thing where it's like they just don't even realize. I mean, I'd never thought of it until you mentioned it, but they probably just don't even think to be like, well, since the guy died, he's not wounded anymore, so take one off the wounded. I think they just, it never dawned on me, but I bet you that's exactly what they would say, too. It's like, you know, it's like, yeah, it's morose to think about, but it's like, yeah, you're right in a sense. It's like, okay, they should take one off the wounded, because clearly that was the person that that died.
Yeah, but again, it's those sort of things. Like, I mean,
what irritates me in a sense is like that they don't like everybody. I think the reaction of everybody when they said the guy was like 6 minutes before the shooting started was like, what? Like, that doesn't make any sense. And but the coverage was like, the mainstream media coverage was just like, okay, the police revised their thing. Here's how it happened now. Without any, like, being... And even the articles are like, the police dramatically changed the timeline of events in Las Vegas without being like, okay, like, how did they fuck this up in the first place? Like, why didn't they know this?
Yeah. No, exactly. I mean, it's... You'd think that there would be certain things that you could lock in pretty early on that would stay fixed. But that hasn't been the case in this case. You know?
Right. And like I said before, it's like I want to believe. I really don't want to go down the rabbit hole of what happened in Las Vegas. But to me, it's like they're making it very difficult by not knowing what this guy was doing. I just find it hard to believe, too, that they just can't figure out like why he did it. You know, to me it just feels like they have to have figured it out and they don't want us to know why. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, no, it definitely feels. It's just like a lot of the other tragically I have to say this, but like a lot of the other shootings that people wanted to jump to conspiratorial conclusions don't have this same flavor. Like, they just don't.
Right.
The lone wolf has felt like a lone wolf, but this felt like if you want to buy into the narrative that all of these have been orchestrated, that they're getting cocky or confident. Like, let's see how far we can push this ridiculousness, you know? Let's give him 14, how many guns is it that he has now? Like, 14 or something? Like...
But I will say this, because I was reflecting upon my own fascination with this case, and I was like, I can see, as much as I really fucking loathe the Sandy Hook people, it's like, you know, the conspiracy theorists, I mean, of course, I can see,
Jesus,
like, what's that?
I said, Jesus, I hope that's what you meant.
Yeah, well, it's 2017. You have to fucking clarify everything to me. someone could take something out of context. The next thing you know, you're on CNN as the villain of America because you said something that they took out of context. So, I can see why that conspiracy theory sort of like grew, and it's similar to this one because you just don't these. I think the point I'm trying to make, which goes against all of our what we were just talking about in the sense where it's like villain of America, it's like I can see why these conspiracies spring up because there's no answers and people are trying desperately to like make sense of something that's so senseless that that these narratives, these alternative narratives, like spring up. And with situations like where the guy shot up the gay club in Orlando, it was like he was a there was a lot. It seemed like there was like 8 different reasons why he did that. And all the other times, you know, people like have manifestos and web pages and, you know, Facebook posts. It's like with the kid that shot up the elementary school and this guy, it's like there's no fucking reason why they did this.
Yeah, I mean, exactly. I mean, like, there's not. With this one, I mean, of course, that's the old chestnut. It's like the idea that conspiracy theories make you feel like there is control in an uncontrolled universe, right? But at the same time, like, this is – they're going to have to go a ways to find an answer for why – what for motivation in this case, I think.
Right.
Because nothing that I've heard makes a lick of sense, like a lick of sense. You know,
he was like a super millionaire.
I would buy his girlfriend broke up with him more than anything else that is being, you know, tossed around at this point.
Right. The whole thing is like super fishy. But like I said, part of me is like I'm up against a wall in a sense where it's like, okay, don't go down this road because, you know, just because you don't know the answer doesn't mean there's some fantastic answer to it. It's like the guy, you know, and it seems so lazy in a way, but at the same time, it's like the guy just could have snapped. The guy just could have gone fucking nuts.
Well, you know, as somebody that I've encouraged you to get on the podcast before has said, that I'm very fond of quoting Gordon White, said in his latest...
I can't get every guest you suggest on the show.
I just suggest one, Tim. Jeez.
You suggested Ren, and I chose Ren.
Okay, fair enough. as Gordon White says, you know, if you're a doctor whose wife has a history of living with someone who is, you know, who practices domestic abuse, and this one time she says that she fell down the stairs, maybe she fell down the stairs, but you've got to, like, kind of think that maybe she didn't. And, the government is fine with doing fishy stuff. And, like, you know, don't get me wrong, I'm a patriot, I'm a right-leaning guy, but, like, the government has...
Do you take a knee at the flag, at the national anthem, or not? That's the other thing we need to talk about since you've been gone. It's a big thing. That's part of America now.
The government has a history of doing some, you know, really crappy practices, like on record, like, you know, the Tuskegee experiments, you know, just like
out. They tested some kind of like radiation shit on Canadians.
Oh, geez.
For real.
Yeah.
It's like week. Google it. I'm telling you.
Let's bring up Project Paperclip. Let's bring up, MK Ultra. Like, all these things are not a matter of debate. So, like, at some point, like, when things like this happen, they fall between the spectrum of, you know, Illuminati and complete coincidence, I think. And normally I'm willing to give them more, you know, I'm willing to lean more toward the complete coincidence side of things. But this one just doesn't. It's like trying to swallow a bite of something that makes it halfway down your throat. It's like, a little bit more, you know.
Yeah. Well, here's something that'll wet your knickers, Josh. You know John Podesta, who ran the Hillary Clinton campaign?
Right.
He just retweeted the Huffington Post article about Tom DeLonge. And he said, stay tuned for a big announcement tomorrow. The truth is out there. So John Podesta is apparently affiliated or associated with the Tom DeLonge project, but we'll see what happens.
If there was a life changing announcement, there would be more hype. And right now, it's the boy who cried wolf. I think that there's.
Well, I don't know. Have you heard the new? Let me just read this thing. Let me see if I can find the part that stood out to me. Hold on one moment. Here's the line that made me my eyebrows go up, because to me then it was like, okay, the jig is up. Fast forward to the present. Now these early advisors have mostly receded to the background and Tom has moved on to something even bigger. He has assembled a new team of collaborators and created the Stars Academy of Arts and Sciences. TTSAAS. Yeah, how about that word salad? For which he is president and interim CEO. The Academy includes three synergistic divisions. Are you ready? These are the three critical divisions here for disseminating this information: science, aerospace, and entertainment. And so once I saw the entertainment part, I kind of was like, all right, this is not to be taken seriously. This is
Right.
This is going to be like we're going to share our secrets about the UFOs in an all new reality series about us trying to decipher the UFO phenomenon or whatever. Oh. It's like, if you're putting an academy of esteemed scientists and whistleblowers and advisors in there, like, why are you... Do something. This is the equivalent of a ghost hunting group that makes the T-shirt before they fucking go on a ghost hunt.
Man, ufologist of the year, right? I mean...
Yeah.
It's astoundingly, I mean, like, look, part of me would love for tomorrow to be, you know, the big D disclosure, but, you know, and part of me wouldn't, but at the same time, like, part of me would like for it to be something rather than, like, you know, a wet fart. And I think that we're, you know, this is wet fart 2017. I think that you're hitting the nail on the head. This is just sort of like, you know, smoke and mirrors, and like, I love that. Like the ghost hunters who make the shirt before they go on the expedition. Like, that's just so.
That's what it is, dude.
Unless they're going to come out and be like, here's
anything that could even possibly confirm any of this shit, which they're not going to do. They're going to tease that they know. They're going to tease. You know, it's going to be a big fucking tease, man. It's going to be like, oh, I saw things that I can't talk about, but when we unveil our later products and stuff and, you know, all that, then you're going to kind of understand what I'm talking about.
Well, this is,
that's
this is
all
also
you're
going to
see.
This is also going to be...
I hope I'm wrong.
No, it's also going to be like one of those sort of UFO chestnuts that's going to stick around forever, where it's like, he really knew something. No, he didn't, you know. No, he knew this. No, he didn't. You know, it's just going to be back and forth like that. Yeah. I mean, it's not going to go away. It's like a scar. We're going to bear the scar for a long time before it fades.
Oh yeah. Well, I was joking with Mark O'Connell on the show, where it's like he wrote the J. Allen Hynek book. It's like you go from J. Allen Hynek, who's you know, an esteemed astronomer, and Stan Friedman, who's a nuclear physicist and discovered fucking Roswell, and then to Tom DeLonge. It's like that's the devolution of ufology there, man. It's like...
What? And this is my thing. Like, if he actually had any sort of governmental support behind him, you would have seen a lot more... If the scope of the announcement is what some people think it would be, or have thought it would be, and
it wouldn't be done the day before. Like,
well, yeah, you would have, it would have been done the day before, and it would be ubiquitous. You know, I mean, like, it'll be on CNN, it'll be on Fox, it will be on everything. You're not seeing that. You're seeing, like, an article from Huffington Post. You're seeing an article from, like, I don't know,
right.
IO9 or something. Like, you know, if there were these big, we're after hours.
Oh, it'll go to our press tomorrow, though. It'll go to our press tomorrow, but
yeah,
I think they're going to tease.
But
I think they'll tease that, like I said, they won't give anything out. They'll just tease shit that they think they know, you know?
Right.
But we talk about conspiracy theories, dude, and I'm sure, like, I don't even want to fucking touch this one, but considering what I told you to start this conversation, just the very fact that John Podesta retweeted the tweet now is like chum in the water for lunatic Pizzagate people to jump, like, you know, to jump on this. And cloud it. I mean, that guy, whether you believe that shit or not, personally, I don't. But if you believe it or not, the guy's just toxic to, like, fucking the online community of people who are, like, who assign all this shit to him. So, as soon as he, it may sound to some people like, oh, this is great, John Podesta fucking retweeted the thing. But to me, it was like, oh, Jesus, dude, just don't touch any UFOs, man. You're toxic. Don't fucking even get involved with UFOs, dude.
No, if there were big swinging G-man dicks behind this, it would be all over every news outlet, and we would have been hearing about it for a week. And you're not. It's appropriately enough for UFOs. It's in the margins. And I think it's going to be something like, you know, it's going to be something like the. I mean, there might be a tidbit or like a nuanced comment that can be dissected ad nauseum, but. It's not going to be the second coming that we were promised. And, you know, I hate to be the person over here saying I told you so, but, yes, told you so.
Well, the good thing is I don't put the show up for, like, 2 days, so by the time the show airs, will I look like assholes or we'll be right, but,
right,
you know.
So we can choose our own adventure here.
I can't imagine that I'd be very surprised if we're sitting here on Thursday and being like, they disclosed the UFO phenomenon. Although, I've joked on the show half seriously that, like, I think the secret – I think I called you up after the election and told you this in private. It was like, the secret to UFO disclosure is getting Trump to fucking respond to it. So, if I'm going to – after the press conference tomorrow, I'm going to tweet Trump myself and be like, are you going to let these guys show you up, dude? You should tell the world about UFOs. Because that, if you agitate him enough, he'll probably fucking talk about UFOs at some point. We can get him to slip up and say something.
I don't know. Unless his life has been deliberately threatened, which, you know, I can see somebody being like, here's the dossier, here's what we'll do to you if you say anything, you know?
He seems to me, for as much as I loathe the man, he seems to me like someone who's so crazy he can't be threatened. So he's just like, I'm going to do what I want when I want and, you know, be damned. And so far it's fucking crazily worked out for him. He's like the lying, he's like the backwards George Costanza. He like does everything you shouldn't do. He somehow, it works out for him, but we shall see. It'll be an interesting press conference, I'm sure about that.
I've been thinking about this in the checkout line today at the grocery store. Like,
So these are Cutchin musings.
Yeah, right? Deep thoughts with Josh Cutchin.
Joshua Cutchling?
Cutchling, yeah, Joshua Cutchling. My Fortran ideas. Fortran musings. That's a Twitter joke for anybody who doesn't know. I don't think that the guy is playing three-dimensional chess, but I do think that he recognizes when stuff will get a knee-jerk reaction out of people. Like this whole thing about him coming up with the word fake, like I have maybe I'm giving way too much credit, but I don't think that he actually believes that he came up with the word fake.
No, of course not.
But I can totally see him just saying that because that's sort of what he wrote into town on, right? It's just like getting a rise out of people. Like he's like the playground bully that likes to get a rise out of you and likes to say stuff,
yeah, it's
even though he knows
yeah.
it's absolutely
it's
true. Yeah, absolutely untrue. Yeah, absolutely. That's my take anyway.
Yeah, well, I joked about it earlier with this thing with the. I mean, they're still going on about this kneeling at the. That's the national anthem at the football games. It's like. It's just, to me, it's just such a ridiculous fucking argument to have. It's like, let the people kneel. Who cares? Just don't. If they want to kneel and you want to stand, do what the fuck you want and leave them alone. Just, like, you know, just don't get involved, dude. Like, what do you care, you know? If you don't respect their argument, then don't even acknowledge it. I mean, personally, I see what they're saying. I get why they're protesting. And to me, it's like, do whatever you want, though. It's like, just don't attack somebody else for doing what they want to do.
This is the thing to me that has... So it struck me when people were all, you know, wringing their hands about fake news allegations when there is a news media that didn't talk to you about Flint and didn't talk to you about Standing Rock. And it's
right.
a similar thing where there's a news media that is all up in arms about kneeling for a flag and, like, the amount of coverage for, like, this national anthem stuff versus the amount of coverage about what's happened in Puerto Rico is astounding.
Right.
And it's illustrative of where we are
criminal.
As a nation.
It's like, criminal is what it is. It's criminal.
Well, I mean, something that Seth Rogen said on his podcast not long ago is like, we're a nation of gossips, and that's all that we care about. We only care about gossip.
Oh,
it's
so
care
true.
About feuds. We only care about feuds. We only care about, you know,
well,
yeah,
that's the country.
Fights,
yeah, the country is. Dude, Kardashians, reality TV. We're a fucking reality TV country, man. Like, we've turned into that.
And you know what? I put that as much on us as I do on anything that has ever come out of the president's mouth. I do. Like, it's...
Oh,
it's,
yeah, absolutely, it's, dude. It's totally... Yes, because
yeah.
I think, and honestly, not to pat ourselves on the back, but I think the people listening here can agree, and they'll pat themselves on the back, and rightfully so, because at least we're fucking detached enough from it to know that.
Yeah.
To know that, like, yeah. we're living in this fucked up reality TV world and it's terrifying in a sense because you have no – we're in the deep minority, dude. Like, we don't care about the Kardashians. Like, we don't – you know, we don't – we're not plugged into this shit. And it's like, it's not that we're getting old. It's like that people, like, the whole society is getting so superficially moronic.
Well, and here's my flip side is that, you know, like, you know, a lot of the same people who are – concerned about respecting the right to, because I think you do have a right to not, you know, not put your hand over your heart for the national anthem, whatever. But I think it's funny that the same people who are defending that right are willing to overlook the incredible amount of misogyny and rape and literal murder and violence in the NFL amongst players. For the sake of, you know, for the sake of their bread and circuses that is the National Football League. People that would decry that same amount of corruption and that same amount of deplorable action in any other industry, because as a percentage, it's huge. If you look at the number of people that
no,
are
you're absolutely
on the,
right about that.
Like,
yeah.
If you look at the number of people that are actually on the field playing that have been involved in some shady shit, it's more than any other industry. But we don't care because they're there to entertain us. And, like, you look at the way that the country was galvanized after an NFL referee strike. Like, that's the most united this country has ever been. And, you know, maybe this is because I was a fat kid that everybody wanted me to play, you know, everybody wanted me to play football, and instead I decided to play tuba. But, like, I have a serious axe to grind for the numbing, is religion the opiate in the masses? No. Professional sports are. And especially football.
Well, I think that
will get behind this, and they will throw all their concern behind this this retribalization of ourselves, and we will make excuses as long as we have to, just so that we're entertained.
Well, I'll say this: I totally agree with you, and I'm going to take it to another level in a sense because if you think about it, there's like three elements at work here. It's like the super rich. Billionaire owners trying to, like, tell people what to say, what not to say. There's the players. And the third thing is, like, they're all killing each other. Well, not the owners aren't, but, like, the the players, their whole job is to, like, smash into each other, man. And they're dying from that. You know, and it's like, it's not even, if anything, it's like, as crazy as it sounds, and I'm sure, I may lose, like, four listeners right now who are like, I've had enough of this. This is the straw that broke the camel's back. But it's like, maybe the NFL itself should be fucking outlawed, because it's like, it's not seeming to be doing any good for anyone other than the people watching on TV. It's like literally the gladiator fights. Like, they're killing each other, smashing their heads into each other, you know, for the profit and spectacle of America.
I mean, there was a study that I've heard cited numerous times where they examined 100 NFL players and 99...
Oh, yeah, they have problems, yeah.
Yeah. 99 had serious problems with brain damage.
Yeah. I think you and I are both going to get a tweet tonight from Carlos Garza being like, put on your tutus and play ballet, boys.
Hey, like, I love Carlos.
You don't, come on, get some love to Carlos, like, Garza there. That was more of a Carlos Garza shout out.
If you want to watch football, just acknowledge it for how incredibly ugly it is. And don't try to make it into, like, this beautiful American thing. I mean, it's American.
Yeah, no,
but, like,
it really is. Like, honestly, like, the more I think about it, talking to you, it's like, it really is like the gladiator fights of our modern times. It's like, you can't have a dude go kill someone else, but at the same time, you can have a dude go smash some dude in the head, you know, with a shitty helmet.
Yeah, I mean,
and they die like 20 years later. It's like, okay.
No, any social injustice, and we don't care, but change the Redskins logo when we're up in arms. It's just,
exactly.
It's nuts. And now we sound like old men. Oh, well.
Yeah, pretty much. Well, I'm going to let you go in a moment, but I want to talk about one last thing since I was off last week, and you're a musician and a true lover of great music. I got to tell you, man, I was pretty crushed by the death of Tom Petty. I thought that I love Dylan. I think he's the greatest of all time. I think Dylan's like the American Shakespeare. But Tom Petty was like, he was like right there with him, man. Just so many good songs, man. Just so many good songs. Like, and it's a heartbreaking loss. I was really, 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 I was just like, and what I liked about Tom Petty was that he wasn't, I said this on all my posts, he was unassuming. He was never like this rock star dude. You know what I mean? He was always just like, it's Tom Petty, man. He just makes great songs. I joked on Twitter about how Cutchin doesn't know about Mr. Belvedere. I'm old. But to me, it was like, this one made me feel old too, where it's like, man, just, dude, Tom Petty died. Like, what the fuck?
Yeah, I think you made a good point about, like, the way that he was sort of a part of America's musical fabric, while not. He was a thread in the musical fabric, while not sticking out as a knot, you know.
Right.
He did some film and TV stuff, but the fact that he largely, eschewed that. Right on the cusp of that era when people were doing that sort of thing, I think speaks a lot to his character. It also speaks a lot to sort of the weight that this carries as to, like, sort of the era that he was in, that sort of generation of musicians that he was a part of. I mean,
yeah,
I'm making a list in my head of, like, who else from that era that I'm, you know, anxious to see go. And, obviously Dylan's part of it, and Clapton is another one that I don't want to see go.
Yeah, like, who's left? Dylan, yeah, Clapton, Paul McCartney, like, Paul Simon.
Well, come on.
Very
Stevie
few.
Wonder.
No, I'm just, Stevie, that's a reach, but at the same time, it's like, who else is left? Oh, the guys from Led Zeppelin.
Yeah, I mean, there are plenty of other people.
We're down to like a dozen, dude. We're down to like 10 people that are left that are, like, iconic figures.
Yeah.
It's scary.
No, I totally agree. And, you know, I think that there was a, after, you know, the deeper you go on, like, the Bowie discography, the more it becomes personal taste. And I think that there's some aspects of the Dylan discography that are a matter of personal taste. But I think that the Petty discography, it's pretty much uniformly listenable, and at the same time not sacrificing listenability for actually being, you know, well put together, decent, thoughtful music, which is something that's it's a fine line to tread. I think he did it really well.
He was one of the very, very greats, man.
Yeah, his death hit me in one sense, in the fact that, like, I didn't, you know, it wasn't like he was battling this or that.
It just came out of nowhere. It's like, what? Tom Petty? Wait a minute. Yeah. Like, no one told me Tom Petty could die.
Well, yeah, he feels like one of those people, like, you know, like Mick Jagger.
If anything, I thought he would be like the old man. I thought, like, you know, we were talking about these icons and shit. It's like, I always kind of envisioned him as, like, the old man after they're all gone. The bridge.
Yeah.
You know, the bridge,
I mean,
to the
how
next.
How old was he?
It's like when the bridge dies, it's like, shit, I'm really old, man.
you remember how old Tom Petty was?
Like 66, 65.
I mean, like, that's part of why it's surprising, too, right? I mean,
I think. I don't know. I'll look that up while we talk. But, yeah, that was, it's just sad, you know.
That doesn't happen as often in America, you know.
I may have gotten him confused with the dude that shot up all those people in Vegas. Because I know he was like 64 or 65. Let's see, how old is somebody?
The powers of be.
He was 66. He was 66, so yeah, I was right.
And that's part of why it strikes me too, I think.
Well, we're getting older, you know. It's only 26. Yeah. That's the funny part, yeah. As you get older, you're like, you get closer and closer to the age when people die. So you're, it's like, oh my God, it's so sad. He died. He was only 42. And you're like, uh-oh. That's only 4 years from where I am. I'm not some 20-year-old kid that, you know.
Well, you know, I managed
to make it well past the 27 club. So I'm due at any moment.
Even scarier is the lack of rhyme or reason, because, like, I'm sure that there are plenty of people in the rock and roll industry who are kicking it hard, who have put who have put worse things in their body than Tom Petty. And,
oh, yeah, Keith Richards.
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly what I'm talking about. And who are just still, like, doing great. And, like, you know, I guess it's just, yeah, it's just disposition. And, you know, if your name's on the ledger, you got to go.
Ain't that the truth, my friend? All right, so you wrote this book.
On that note.
And when's it coming out? When can people buy the fairy book?
It's going to be about paranormal child abduction. It's coming out the first half of 2018.
Oh, wait, so it's not, I thought you were writing a fairy book, though.
Well, I mean, it's the book is roughly divided into paranormal child abduction in the fairy folk era and then paranormal child abduction in the UFO era. And then comparing.
Oh, so
the
it's
two.
All. Oh,
because,
interesting.
Yeah, it's, yeah.
I thought you were writing just
because,
a fairy book in general. What's the title of this book?
The title isn't confirmed yet because it's, you know, that's
the nicest that's way to say child abduction in French or some of the shit.
No.
Like Oubliette?
Well, it's subject to a lot of things, like, you know, whether or not there's another book out there with a title like this, and whether or not Patrick likes it. Patrick likes the title that I've chosen, which is Thieves in the Night.
Ooh, I like
but,
that.
Yeah, it's so it looks at
captures the idea of things. Yeah.
It's about fairy abduction, child abduction in the fairy lore, and it looks at child abduction in lore worldwide, like indigenous folklore worldwide, then child abduction in the UFO era, and then sort of the last couple of chapters are Sasquatch and the missing 411 thing, and then sort of my conclusions. And it all sort of wraps up into one big ball of wax, I think. So it should be coming out first half of 2018 is when Patrick goes.
And that's from Anomalous Books?
Yeah, it'll be through Anomalous, yeah.
They do great work. They published your last two books, right?
Yes, A Trojan Feast, about the food and drink offerings of alien series and Sasquatch, and The Brimstone Deceit, which is all about smells and the paranormal.
Well, I wish we had more time to talk about smells of the paranormal, my friend, but we're up against the clock.
It's okay, buddy. No worries. It was a pleasure. Absolutely.
All right, man. Thank you very much. I really enjoyed this conversation, and I like hearing about people's vacations, so fuck everybody else if they don't like it.
Well, I
want to go to Ireland. We'll go there. I want to put my head on that fucking rock where your head falls inside. So,
I hope everybody else likes hearing about my vacation because that's what they got. So, yeah.
Well, you left your stamp on this season, my friend. So thank you very much. I love you, buddy. I'll see you soon in New Orleans, I hope.
Yep. Oh,
and keep us posted on when the book comes out. And good luck, my friend. Thank you for coming on the show.
Too. Yeah, we'll do. Love you, buddy. And thanks for having me on the show. Appreciate it.
No problem, man. Oh, hey, what's your website now? Where should we send folks to get these books and stuff?
That might still be my website, joshuacutchin.com. It's not the sexiest thing in the world. I gotta work on some.
All right, joshuacutchin.com. All right, man.
Yeah.
I'm always doing my job to make sure others can official web. I had to laugh because at the top I just called it up. It says official website. No, like a big word, Joshua Cutchin, and there's a big picture of you. So
official website, that's all. Yeah.
Who made this? Who made this website for you, dude? I didn't know you needed. Don't go to any of those Joshua Cutchin websites. They're unauthorized. They are bootleg. There's some bootleg Cutchin websites out there that we just do not endorse. So you want to go to joshuacutchin.com. That's the official website.
Yeah, you can't control.
All right, man. I'll see you. I wish I could see you before New Orleans, but I know I will see you there, and then we'll have some adventures. Hopefully, driving back to Georgia, I want to do the road trip with you for Paramania, so we'll talk about that off the air. But until then, good night, my buddy, and we'll talk soon.
Good night, bud. Bye.
Joshua Cutchin, thank you so much for coming on the show, my friend. Check out his website, joshuacutchin.com. We're up against the clock here. Next week on the show, Aaron Gullius is going to talk about conspiracy theories. Who knows what's going to happen with this thing until next week. But as you can imagine, and based on our conversation tonight with Joshua Cutchin, I'm like fascinated by this Vegas thing. So I'm hoping that Aaron Gullius has taken a look at it and can give us some insight into what he thinks. That'll be next week on the program. What is it? 10-17-17. Creepy. Until next time, my friends, this is Tim Banal. Thank you for listening and signing off.